Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. This is Zach Rogers. I'm the executive editor of Ad Exchanger. My guest in the studio is Janae Redmond. Janae is a Twitter executive and, in fact, the senior most executive at MoPub. Having joined the mobile SSP prior to its acquisition by Twitter. So really excited to have her here. Welcome, Janae.
Thank you so much for having me.
I thought we could start with just a little history on MoPub's sort of life at Twitter. You know, the acquisition was 4 years ago.
Yeah, 4 years ago in 2013.
Okay.
So I'll give you kind of my history within MoPub because I think the 2 years before are equally as important as the last 4 years or soon to be 4 years inside of Twitter.
Yes, sounds great.
Company was founded in 2010 and with a primary focus on serving mobile publishers. When I say mobile publishers, I mean in-app specifically. And I think it's important to draw a distinction there because that's really where our focus has been and will continue to be. So we built our business around ad serving, mediation, so working with ad networks, and then our mobile ad exchange. And in 2013, caught the eye of Twitter and ultimately decided to sell the company to Twitter at that point in time. So that was 4 years ago in late October.
Seems longer ago somehow.
Yeah. I started thinking about when I joined MoPub, which is in 2012. So I've been with the company, what is that, five, six years now?
Yeah.
It's been a really exciting ride for the last several years and seeing the company evolve both from where it started, which was, you know, focused at core ad serving, mediation, then the exchange, and to now being part of a much bigger publisher organization like Twitter. So it's been pretty exciting.
Okay, great. And what has been the sort of the prominent focus of your engineering efforts?
Sure.
Like, what have you poured your efforts into building over there under Twitter?
Yeah. So when we sold the company in 2013, there were a couple of different value propositions that we saw as what I would say strategic synergies between the two companies. Twitter has this plethora of major Fortune 1000 advertisers that it continues to work with today and certainly did then. And they had an outpouring of demand, essentially. Mm-hmm. And when we looked at the MoPub business, one of the things that we thought could be hugely valuable to our main customer, which is mobile publishers, is access to that demand, to be able to bring those Fortune 1000 brands into the mobile app ecosystem, which at that time had been predominantly dominated by performance marketers. That was a huge opportunity, and that's one that we saw and that we wanted to capitalize on pretty immediately. So the first couple of years following the acquisition, you can assume year one was very logistical and operational.
Sure.
Figuring out how you fit into the broader ecosystem inside of Twitter.
Show people how to use their 401k.
Exactly. Getting my new computer, which, you know, needed to be sanitized by Twitter and everything.
Of course.
So we spent the first year really just getting inside the organization, making sure we're aligned around values and culture, and then identifying what's the highest kind of order bit between the two companies, now one, that's going to provide value in both directions. And that was the first most obvious area for us to spend time on. And I think
getting
shortly—
those hooks for buyers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it solved for challenges that Twitter had. We have, most publishers have a fixed audience size that grows at, you know, a steady tick over time, but isn't growing 10, 15x from a user base standpoint at some certain maturity. So they needed an outlet for all of the demand that was going to go unsatisfied by these marketers who wanted to work with Twitter. And they essentially built out a DSP to extend that audience, those advertising dollars onto MoPub's exchange. Mm-hmm. So in 2014, we launched the Twitter audience platform. And mm-hmm. that was a joint effort between MoPub and Twitter, and our engineering resources, as kind of as your question started, was dedicated to really supporting that effort. The benefit on the MoPub side was really to provide those Fortune 1000 brand dollars to our mobile app developers that mm-hmm. were using our exchange today.
What was the impact on yield for your publishers when you flip the switch on the
sure.
audience platform?
I think what's interesting is when we look at our exchange, we have today, we have over 49,000 mobile apps using our platform and 180 DSPs. So Twitter coming on as a DSP was just another DSP in the ecosystem, but it naturally drove increased demand in auction pressure, which positively impacted many of our publishers. And then on the converse, when I always talk about our business, I have to talk about both sides, right? What does it mean for the marketer and what does it mean for the publisher?
Right.
For the publisher, they saw a nice diversification of demand. So it wasn't the traditional performance dollars that they were seeing historically, but starting to see much more of that Fortune 1000 set of advertisers coming from the Twitter DSP. So it became a really interesting benefit and something frankly, uniquely differentiated about the MoPub exchange. We had a fairly unique demand source coming from Twitter. Not many other exchanges can claim that they have social access to social RTB dollars, if you will, right?
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
In terms of demand in the app environment, that's an area historically that's benefited from install dollars.
Yeah.
And today, I think install spending is still huge.
Absolutely is.
Where are we at with Fortune 1000 versus install? Do you have a sense that, like, across your exchange, who's dominant and how's the balance of influence changing?
For sure. Yes, it is changing. And the short answer is we're seeing a major influx of brands moving into the ecosystem. But I think the longer answer and kind of the broader context there is why that's happening. So I think about when I started at MoPub in 2012, we were serving 320 by 50s, tiny little GIFs at the bottom of these apps with like flashing egg creatives, frankly. And yes, they were performance driven. So the quality wasn't exactly great, but it was driving performance for the marketers. Publishers were really still getting into the app ecosystem. And I think 2012, we were still arguing whether or not HTML5 and responsive web design was going to be the future.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's 2017. I think it's safe to say that app is where the consumer market is certainly going. And as a result, not only did the MoPub business, but many others in the industry, we spent a lot of time investing in creative formats. And that benefits both sides of the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
It benefits the publisher from a user experience standpoint. We're not serving flashing egg creatives anymore in a 320 by 50.
Right.
But we're creating experiences for the consumer that are far more enjoyable and far more cohesive with the actual experience that they're getting in the in-app environment. And then conversely, on the marketer side, we're enabling a far better creative canvas, not just for performance marketers to engage with their users, but for brand marketers to start testing their, you know, their toes or dipping their toes into water around the in-app ecosystem.
The agencies like it. The brands like it because it's more impactful.
Exactly. They can engage also more effectively, and they're seeing the ROI.
Is part of what's going on also just better match rates in mobile?
Do you mean match rates on?
A brand wants to reach their audience or model their CRM data.
Yeah.
And they can just find more of their audience online in mobile and app environments than they used to be able to, so they're willing to spend more.
Yeah, I think it's certainly one of the factors. So when I think about like why we're seeing more brands move, it's a combination of things. One, I started talking about the creative formats, and I think that's things like native and video. High impact, consumers like it, publishers like it, meaning there's a lot of supply. So that's the scale piece, which is the second one, which is what ultimately programmatic provides. And as I think about like people-based marketing, and I think that's somewhat of what you're alluding to there is like, are we seeing a stronger ability to actually find your users in the in-app ecosystem?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I ultimately do think that. My belief actually is that mobile has always been the people marketing based kind of environment. We have a persistent identifier like an IDFA or an Android ID, and it's a device that's uniquely yours. I would be hard pressed to believe that you're going to give me your phone and let me go and, you know, use it for the next week. It's not a shared device.
Janae, it's fine. No one else, though.
Yes. So I think it's, you know, it's slightly different than a computer that sits at home and can be shared or used publicly. So it has a lot of information that I think is uniquely personal that allows for a better targeting experience for advertisers and, you know, consequently better ROIs. So I do think that that's one aspect that's driving the adoption of programmatic in particular in mobile, but specifically buying in the in-app ecosystem.
Okay, so we know the Fortune 1000s are coming on strong. Are we seeing less install advertising? Is that demand changing, or is it basically the same as it was a few years ago?
I would say they're actually getting far more sophisticated. So okay. I definitely don't see the in-app advertising demand from a performance standpoint shifting or being negatively impacted in any way. But I would say that they were the pioneers of the people-based marketing approach, right? Yeah. They spent so much time fine-tuning their algorithms on LTV, understanding the value of their user. Is this consumer going to spend on my app if I'm a retail app, or are they going to purchase currency inside of my app if I'm a gaming app? So from my perspective and what we see on our exchange is that the gaming guys are continuing to release new titles, and the performance folks that are focused on LTV or installs continue to come into the ecosystem and spend strong and intelligently as well.
Okay, great. Let's talk a little bit about where MoPub fits in the publisher ad stack.
Yeah.
And where you guys aim to play in a few years' time.
Yeah.
What's your reach with publishers right now? And then, like, how do they use you? How do they think of you?
Sure. So we work with 49,000 mobile apps across our platform today. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the MoPub business, our business is comprised into three products, all pretty intimately connected, but also can be used almost a la carte as well.
Mm-hmm.
A majority, I think it's about 70 or 80% of our publishers use what I would say is full platform.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at our full platform being core ad serving, so the ability to serve ads for direct sold. We have our mediation platform, which is working with ad networks and being able mm-hmm. to mediate those as part of their demand that they have coming in alongside their direct sales. And then, of course, our marketplace, our ad exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And within our ad exchange, we have 180 plus DSPs buying in real time that compete for that publisher's inventory.
Okay.
So to answer the second part of your question, which is where we see ourselves sitting from a stack standpoint inside the publisher, we are their stack.
Yes, got it.
So we operate often in most circumstances, our SDK, all of our circumstances, our SDK is present.
Mm-hmm.
But in most circumstances, we're their ad server of record, and they're leveraging us for full platform for mediation as well as their exchange. And if they're a sophisticated large publisher, they're doing a bunch of direct sales and utilizing our ad serving as well.
Do you see the addressable market of publisher customers as being steady, growing, shrinking? What's happening to your total addressable market? Yeah,
it's interesting. So I don't think the absolute number of publishers in the overall ecosystem is growing at the same rate it was, say, 2 or 3 years ago. But
mm-hmm.
what's interesting is each of these publishers are producing more and more titles underneath their umbrella.
Okay.
So what you're starting to see is a ton of studios. I'm using air quotes, which you can't see, for the audience. That are producing games on a cyclical basis. So
Game studios,
but not just game studios, but broader companies that are either like a utility app player, a utility publisher. Cheetah Mobile is a great example. They're constantly releasing new utility apps for their consumer base.
Okay.
So the absolute number of total publishers is definitely still growing. There are new entrants into the market. There are definitely more premium publishers that are starting to invest heavily in their app experience.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that that's growing the same way it was, I'd say, in 2012. But rather, we're seeing the actual number of mobile apps underneath those publishers continue to grow and saturate the app stores across Google and Apple.
Okay, great. And who's your competitive set?
That's a tough question to answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because we do play in so many spaces. So I think what's interesting is when I think about our competitive set, I find that we're in a, what I would say, co-opetition with a lot of our customers, or not customers, but partners.
Okay.
So the most obvious people would always pin us against Google because they have legitimately every aspect of our platform. I think the difference for us is that we're squarely focused on the in-app ecosystem. Google plays much more in the enterprise desktop space as well as app. But we also partner very closely with Google. Google's a buyer on our exchange. They're one of the key demand sources from a network standpoint for publishers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to say that, like, hey, those guys are our competitors when we also have QBRs with them on the demand side regularly from a DSP standpoint.
Understood.
So the value exchange is a little gray.
Sure.
But they do have a competitive product, but we also work pretty collaboratively with them.
All the largest platforms in this industry are also big advertisers.
Yes, that's the other thing, right? Google through Essence is a big buyer. They certainly buy in our exchange. So I think the ecosystem's a bit gray there. And when we make decisions internally and we think about where we're going to innovate or what we're going to do from a partner standpoint, it ultimately comes down to what is going to drive value for our mobile publishers. That's our core customer. Mm-hmm. And that's typically how we ground our decisions. So partnering with Google, despite the fact that we have overlaps in our businesses, is the right outcome for our customer. And that's what we'll continue to do.
Okay, great. Let's talk about technology change and, in particular, header bidding.
Oh, the buzzword.
You knew we were going to get there.
I'm glad. The only other buzzword that really can't come into this conversation is probably blockchain. I'm not sure that that really fits in here, but that would be another good buzzword to put
in
there.
I will accept that challenge.
It will
show up later in the conversation. No, it won't. So header bidding has been a wrecking ball through the desktop SSP space. I mean, it's destroyed margins there, and it's created way more competition in among that competitive set, which includes people like Rubicon and PubMatic and OpenX, and you know the competitors. It's been something that's drawn outside players like Facebook and Amazon, which haven't historically competed as SSPs into trying to provide a publisher ad solution. And yet, you know, the mobile space has been mostly insulated from those effects of header bidding, which have been great for publishers, I should say.
Yes, that's definitely been the view.
What do you think is going to happen? Is header bidding going to come into the mobile exchange arena?
Yeah, so here's my thoughts on that. And I've had this conversation more than once for sure. So I understand that there's been a ton of benefits from a header bidding standpoint in the desktop ecosystem, but desktop is not the same as mobile. And I think that's wherein lies some of the challenges which our customers are faced with. They're like, hey, this header bidding thing is huge in desktop. Should we be doing it in mobile? Well, first off, there is no header in mobile. So that's the first problem. But at its core, I understand what we're really trying to solve for. And my observations are header bidding was trying to solve for getting to the top of this perceived waterfall inside the desktop ecosystem to drive better yield and give marketers better position with those publishers. In the app ecosystem, that is also the legacy waterfall stack is still very much well adopted and utilized by our customers. And it's because of how the ecosystem has evolved. Ad networks are a huge source of revenue for publishers. And ad networks today and historically have bought on both action basis, so CPA or install or LTV models. And that's made it very hard to go and disrupt that waterfall model. There's been no real need or reason to. So my view is that, yes, I think header bidding will come to the app ecosystem. It won't be called header bidding because there is no header. Mm-hmm. But the concept itself, I think, really draws it from MoPub's view as well, is we really just need to resolve this notion of the legacy waterfall, ultimately flattening it. But in order to be successful, we have to make sure that when we do that, it has to be both operationally sound and logistically sound. And that means including not just other exchanges in this in the practice, but also ad networks, who are a huge portion of the publisher revenue in the mobile app ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And without kind of everyone coalescing around all of those different vendors working together, whether it's an exchange or an ad network, I don't think a publisher could utilize a header bidding solution in the mobile app ecosystem and be truly successful without alienating some portion of their revenue.
Okay. So how will that sort of coalescing happen? How will everybody sort of link together? Do you see it in the cards for 2018?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen a number of folks in the space taking a stab at doing this. I think some of those approaches have been a bit siloed and fragmented to just one demand source that matters to a publisher. The view and the position that MoPub is taking is that we want to work with every demand source that is important to a publisher and establish a technically sound solution that somewhat collapses the waterfall and allows networks to compete in a more real-time advanced bidding perspective alongside the exchanges, which have access to, you know, 100 and plus DSPs that have always been buying in this capacity. And the desired end state is ensuring that it drives more yield for publishers, transparency across kind of that chain.
Ultimately through just more bid density.
More bid density, which I think is what the value you derive in the desktop space. It just drives more yield. But I also think transparency is important, both for the advertiser as well as the publisher. And I think that needs to be in place across each of those different aspects as well in order for it to be, one, widely adopted, two, actually solve for the challenges that I believe header bidding has been attempting to solve for, at least in the desktop ecosystem.
Okay, great. So Twitter, how do you work with them? You at one time were run very independently. Is that still true? And what are you getting from Twitter right now?
Yeah. Yes, we're part of Twitter. Like I said, I think year one, we were definitely independent, and I think it's a reflection of just an ad tech company moving into a publisher organization, figuring out where kind of you blend the two organizations and find synergies that make sense and provide value in both directions.
Yeah.
We see a substantially changed environment in the last 4 years inside the organization from an integration standpoint. There's a lot more.
Did that accelerate more recently, or did it go back to the early days?
I think it's been a slow and steady and obvious as well as deliberate integration over the last 4 years. It's aligning around things that are important for both companies, investments that make sense from what we're seeing in the overall advertising ecosystem, trends that we want to capitalize on as two different businesses and products, frankly. So it's been pretty steady over the last 4 years in my observation. Year one, I will say, like, we just had to, quite frankly, figure out how we were all going to play in kind of the same company. But after that, it was pretty deliberate. Like I mentioned earlier, we launched a Twitter audience platform, and that was a joint effort between the two organizations in a very organic way for our businesses to align.
Is there Twitter data that you are leveraging or that you'd like to leverage?
Yeah, and I think I had mentioned this in a conversation with one of your reporters a few...
I believe that was Allison Schiff.
Yes, Allison. It was about 6 or 8 weeks ago. So Twitter data, a hot commodity. I think you talked about this with Jeremy from the Weather Channel about the importance of data. And, you know, they've broken down that notion of a walled garden by taking their data outside the ecosystem or their ecosystem. So, yes, Twitter data is super important, and we are leveraging aspects of it to inform some of our products. We recently launched our inventory packages, which was GA'd, I think, in July. And that has had a pretty big success for us in terms of adoption on the buy side of the ecosystem, helping DSPs really find audiences that matter to them based on signals that we see that are unique not only to Twitter, but also unique to our exchange and just the sheer scale that we have. So that's certainly one area of investment and kind of organic overlap between the two businesses. I think the third is really we monetize mobile ads for mobile publishers.
Right.
Twitter's a mobile publisher. I don't have too much to say on that other than Anthony talked about it in, I believe it was our Q1 earnings call, might have been Q2, but he mentioned that Twitter's exploring third-party demand. I think it would only be natural for MoPub to play a role in what their monetization strategy looks like outside of their direct sales organization.
Yes.
So that's obviously another area that
tantalizing.
So that's another area that we'd love to capitalize on, and hopefully we'll continue to do so. They're a publisher. We have to sell the dream like we do to all of our other mobile publishers. So we'll spend time there. But that's some of the different ways that our businesses have kind of organically grown together and leveraged some of the different assets across the organization, besides just the four walls and the great cafeterias that we have in all of our offices.
So let's talk a little bit about badvertising, which, you know, generically speaking, fraud, quality issues, brand safety, non-viewable inventory. What's your perception on the prevalence of undesirable supply? To what extent has that problem been solved, or will it ever be?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. And I'll set up the way I think about it is.
And I also apologies to the listener and to you for like lumping them all together, because yeah. I know I'm like, fraud and viewability and brand safety are extremely discrete and different issues. But I'm asking it all as one sort of.
So I'll take a step back and unpack it a little and give some context. I think what we're trying, the overall ecosystem, whether you're in mobile or desktop or video or whatever the medium be, I think the ecosystem has kind of coalesced around this desire to ensure that they're serving their ads to the right user at the right time and in the right environments. And the derivative of that is, how do I measure that? Can I guarantee or have some level of confidence that my ad's showing up where I intended it to, which comes really down to like the measurement component. And then am I confident that it's in a well-lit environment, high-quality content that I'd want my advertisement aligned to? Those are basically the fundamental problems that we're trying to solve for the end marketer. And I think they have kind of manifested themselves in different ways in the different channels. In desktop, it had its own challenges, and now we're seeing those same ones attempt to be solved for in the mobile ecosystem. My view has always been that same thing to it, header bidding conversation, like it's different. We need to solve for it differently. And the position that we've taken at MoPub, and this is something we've always thought about from the early days of our company and has been in our DNA, is quality. And quality can be measured in a number of different ways. But we want to make sure that the advertisements that are coming into our exchange are high quality, because we want to protect our publishers. We want to ensure that the inventory that the ads are being served into are actually quality publishers and not fraudulent in any way. And then I think the last component to that is, well, can we measure that and provide some third party outside view that says, hey, they're actually doing what they say they're doing?
This the MRC audits.
Right. Yeah. Or leveraging a third party like Moat or IAS.
Yeah.
So we've taken a three-pronged approach to addressing quality, and a broad sweeping statement there. We think about it from a product standpoint. So continuing to innovate to prevent fraudulent activity, to ensure high quality advertisements come into the ecosystem. So on both sides. So we'll continue. And that's an arms race, right? You constantly have to be innovating there. That's always going to be a drumbeat that we'll have, because I think it's important to stay ahead of just the curve. Mm-hmm. So that's the product side. I think there's people component. You need humans involved. You need eyeballs involved, scanning creatives, looking at data, looking at insights to make sure that there's no nefarious behavior happening on a proactive as well as a reactive basis. And the last piece is the partnership side, which has been probably in the works now for the last year, 12 to 18 months, with the IASs and the Moats of the world actually moving their solutions into the mobile app ecosystem. So I'm excited to say that we were early in this and working very closely with both of those companies to take their SDK, embed that within our technology, within our SDK, so that we can enable our inventory that's coming through our exchange to be rated or graded from a viewability standpoint.
Okay.
We're actually just GAing that now. So we will have Moat and IAS SDKs integrated in ours, and our publishers will now have the ability to integrate our SDK seamlessly and make their inventory viewable or graded for viewability. Can't think of a better term to describe that at the moment, which is going to be, I think, a huge game changer for the ecosystem.
Well, it will be for Mark Pritchard, that's for sure.
Yes, we can say we heard you. We understand. So that's, for us, has been a big investment because we care about the quality piece. We think it's important for both sides of the ecosystem. But I think it does change the landscape pretty dramatically from a brand standpoint. I had mentioned earlier, we're seeing brand dollars shift into the mobile app ecosystem. And I think creative formats have driven that. Scale has driven that. But the one piece that's been missing has been, I think, this assurance that their ad can be seen and it's in a high quality and well-lit environment. And enabling IAS and Moat through our technology, I think, will deliver that for them. So hopefully we continue to see that shift and more brands getting excited about in-app programmatic.
Yes, hope so too. All right, just one more for you on blockchain. Just kidding.
I was like, oh, crap.
Just kidding. We'll leave it there. Janae, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much
Great
for having
conversation.
Me.
Great conversation. And to the listener, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Ad Exchanger Talks. Hope to see you next week.
produced by Bigfoot Music and Sound in New York City.